you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, welcome to Elder Talk. Another exciting discussion ahead, Susan, right?
Absolutely.
We're this week going to talk about a topic that everybody is familiar with, but especially those who are approaching those retirement years and who worry about the fact that, you know, maybe their memory isn't what it should be. Is this normal? Is this normal aging? Or is this something that could possibly be that terrible word, Alzheimer's? Mm-hmm. And everyone fears Alzheimer's because, you know, many of us are under the impression that, gee, there's not much that can be done. And you know, are there ways for us to care for our loved ones? How do we provide the care that we need to provide for our loved ones? And so that's kind of the discussion that we want to have. We want to kind of take hold of this issue of Alzheimer's and memory problems as we age and talk about that for our audience, those who may have a loved one that might now or in the future be dealing with those issues. Tell our audience who our guests are today.
Well, this is such an important issue. We actually have two guests in the studio with us today. April Haskins is the administrator for the Villages of St. Peter's Memory Care, which is an assisted living facility designed for those living with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. Now, April's journey with memory care began as a young girl, seeing how her grandfather struggled with Alzheimer's dementia, which led her to the career she has now. And also joining us today is Ann Warren, the Director of Nursing at the Villages of St. Peter's Memory Care. Ann also has personal experience dealing with a family member experiencing memory loss and has over 8 years in the geriatric field of care. She's a member of the Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society and has specialized training in dementia and Alzheimer's care and works with an organization called Interact, which is a quality improvement program that includes clinical and educational tools and strategies for long-term care facilities.
Well, so I know that many of our audience would love to ask you more questions than we have time for. So we'll try to act as the spokespeople and identify the most important things. So let's start by talking about, you know, what is the approach for people who are starting to have problems with their memory? Is it more often them? Is it they, the person who has potentially a memory issue that notices it? Or is it often loved ones around them that initiate this process?
I think most times it's the family that initiates the process. What we find is it's very surprising to the family. By the time it gets to them, they think that this is early stage. And what's really happened is they're usually moderate stage or later stage. They're very good at hiding the early stages of it, especially if they have a spouse that does not have dementia. They cover. The spouse is afraid you're going to take their loved one and they're going to have to move out of their home or lose their ability to drive. So they cover up a lot. And by the family, by the time the family finds out, it's usually farther along than what they're anticipating.
So it's kind of natural for, I guess, those, any of us who, you know, who may be having memory problems and we think, gee, I wouldn't want this to be obvious to people. So we would develop skills to conceal those things, in part because of pride, you know, in part because of fear of embarrassment. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, those other issues that flow from that, loss of independence, et cetera. So tell us what takes place between the time that there's concern within the family to the time that this person may live in a facility where they get some sort of professional care. What's the process in between those two times?
Well, from my experience, what I've seen working with families directly is that it's usually something that has happened in relation to that person experiencing memory loss in a safety issue. The family has notice that the gas was left on, that the stove was never turned on, but the gas was. That's more of an immediate need, and so those families are very active in whether it be touring facilities, communicating with the Alzheimer's Association, speaking to support groups and finding out what that next avenue is going to be. Most people want to keep their loved one at home, and if that's an option, they do.
And it probably would be an option for a period of time, would it not? Mm-hmm. Is it sometimes an option for them to permanently, until the person passes, keep them at home? Is that very often practical?
I don't know how practical that is. Can it happen? Absolutely. But, you know, very often family members are like, oh my gosh, you guys are angels, you know, that you can come to work and deal with this all day. And, you know, I say it's very easy when you're doing it one shift at a time, when you're the 24/7 caregiver. So it's not the same as mom needs a little bit of help. You're going to take her to the grocery store. You're going to cut her grass. This is 24/7 supervision. As this disease progresses, mom may go outside to get her mail and not remember where she was going or how to get back in halfway down the driveway.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We have like silver alerts and all of those different types of things where it's often just a loved one is lost. They have started out going somewhere that they had always gone before, and they are suddenly an hour or two in the wrong direction. And that seems to me, that would be my fear if I were trying to take care of my parents at home in that situation.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think, too, when you think about the reality of keeping somebody at home and needing that 24-hour safety supervision is the cost of it. That's 24 hours a day that you're either going to do it yourself or pay somebody to come into your own home. And home health is a fantastic option. But for ongoing 24-hour care, it may not be feasible financially for the family to be able to do that.
So insurance is not going to pay for that. In all likelihood.
Right.
Right.
Very much a shock, I think, to a lot of family members. I can't preach enough. Go speak to an elder law attorney. Mm-hmm. I think old school was definitely let's save for retirement. You know, let's make sure we have a 401k or a pension or savings, perhaps even as far as paying for funeral costs or having life insurance. Well, Medicaid, Medicare, they're not going to pay for anything other than a skilled nursing facility or what most would identify with as a traditional nursing home. They're not going to pay for in-home care. They're not going to pay for assisted living or assisted living memory care.
So this this emergence of this category of care facility called a memory care facility, talk a little bit about why this came into existence independent of, I mean, we already have assisted living facilities, we already have nursing homes, but memory centers are developing separately, such as yours, where that's the focus of this is what we do. Mm-hmm. Why is it important that there be a separate facility?
The care that you're going to give people that are living with dementia is vastly different than what someone would need in an assisted. So when you start out, you're going to have an independent living facility that they pretty much come and go. There are some amenities. You may have a nurse practitioner that is available to them 24/7. There's a dining area that's available almost as you were on a resort. Then you go to assisted living. There you're going to be able to get, you know, you're going to have that call button to where, oh my gosh, I've fallen in the bathroom and I need help, or they are probably going to have their meds delivered to them, someone to come and remind them of that, but they're still pretty much free to come and go as they want. They could still keep their cars. And then you have memory care assisted living. So yes, they're physically able to do these things, but they're not going to remember that it's time to eat breakfast. They're not going to remember, oh, to brush my teeth, to pull my pants up after I go to the bathroom. So they're physically capable of doing that, but they need a lot of cueing. Mm-hmm. Definitely more management over their medicine to make sure that they're taking everything at the right time.
So in some ways, it's not so bad that they need a nursing home. And then in other ways, it's worse than a traditional assisted living would provide.
That's correct.
So they're kind of in this nether area where this facility comes in and provides mm-hmm. that oversight without the heavy medical intervention you'd think of normally as mm-hmm. a nursing home. Is that
yes,
true?
That's correct.
Yes.
So in terms of the cost, give our listeners some idea what it costs if they had a loved one in an assisted living mm-hmm. center for memory care.
Mm-hmm. So the cost is going to range a little bit, but from my experience in touring other communities, they would be looking at anywhere from high $5,000 a month through, I've heard, up to $10,000 a month.
In this area? Or
$10,000 being not your common, but yes,
yeah,
in this
on
area.
On the higher end.
Mm-hmm.
And how do people typically pay for this?
So far, my experience with my families is that the population that I'm working with, it is their own money. They had farms that they had sold over time. They were savers, whether it be a little pot dug in the ground and they're throwing money in it. They were not big credit card users. They invested well in long-term care insurance. A mixture of mm-hmm. those is how the family is able to pay out of their own, out of that person's finances.
So but now we mentioned though, normally Medicaid is not available to many people. I mean, and if you look at the general rules are that you have to be very poor to qualify for Medicaid. But many of our listeners know that it's increasingly popular for people in the middle class to seek out attorneys, elder law attorneys in particular, who can help them arrange their finances so that many of them can, in fact, qualify for some of that care. With the definition of someone being disabled or needing care now, including memory problems as a separate issue from the activities of daily living, those more physical things we think about, is it not possible that some portion of that would be paid by Medicaid?
Not for an assisted living.
I see.
That's not been my understanding.
Yeah.
They could go into a skilled nursing facility.
That's so frustrating for the reasons you just said.
Mm-hmm. Because they'll lose a lot of those abilities. It's kind of a use it or lose it. And you're dealing with such a larger sheer number in a skilled nursing facility. The patient ratios are not as good as you're going to get in those assisted livings. And they're just not really set up. Traditional skilled nursing facilities, you're going to have a large dining room that everyone goes to, or maybe a couple of those. That's extremely overstimulating for someone living with dementia or Alzheimer's. So they're just set up totally differently. The activity programs are going to be
I get it that it's different. And it just seems discriminatory because, as we talked about, the typical people who are in assisted living, I get it, that the attitude of the federal government and the state government as far as the taxpayers' money is that, well, we think, we know they need help, but it's not as severe. So we are only giving it to people who need skilled care.
Mm-hmm.
But people with Alzheimer's, they can't stay in a regular assisted care facility. So really they are like the people who need skilled care, but yet that traditional facility, as you describe, is not really for them.
It's very frustrating. I mean, I think that we have been advocates since getting into this profession, working with this demographic, that what can we do to change government? Unfortunately, it doesn't take two people. It takes a lot more than that, because we're creating every day. We're looking at our population that live with us, and we create moments of joy at this point it's about quality of life. How can we make each person there happy? What do they enjoy? It's not a cookie cutter disease, and they were an individual prior to having the dementia of some kind. But if we move straight to nursing home, then a lot of times they would end up in a wheelchair faster, and so now their muscles are not being used.
Yeah, I would expect that they would not be as functional as long as they would otherwise be. So give us a sense of what can someone expect if their loved one ends up in assisted living, and the many good things that we'll talk more about that in a minute that might be part of that program, but still, what would they expect over time? Is your average client there 1 year, 2 years, 5 years? What is the typical course?
Well, we have run the full gamut. You know, there's no rhyme or reason for how that disease is going to progress. For some of our neighbors, they've been with us since we opened. We're going on 2 years in November, and they're still going strong. For others, they come in and within 3 months, the disease has progressed. It just depends on where those plaques are forming. For some of them, you get it to where it forms on a part of the brain that controls their swallowing. Then all of a sudden they're more prone to aspiration pneumonia, choking, those kind of things. It could affect their walking. All of a sudden they're having more falls, where they could be injured from that, or it could be a very slow progression. So everybody's different.
So it's difficult to state a clear pattern. Okay. We're going to take a break. Be back in a moment talking about the issue of care for our loved ones when they have memory problems.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
Well, we're back. We're talking about issues related to memory care as people age. We're talking about the care that's available for those who can no longer stay at home. We're all familiar with Alzheimer's. And, you know, it's kind of a feared, dreaded, I guess, prognosis for many people. And many think that there's little hope. I'm optimistic that there's going to be wonderful things develop in the medical community. It just doesn't appear to be immediately on the horizon, does it, that you guys hear about very often?
Not at this point. We have medicines that can be used for very early on stage that help slow down the process. It's not going to stop the process.
Like Aricept and...
Namenda. There are a couple of the, you know, big names that are used most commonly. But again, that problem comes from, by the time the family recognizes that there's a problem,
sometimes
we've already moved past that early on stage. Not that it won't help some, but it would definitely be more beneficial if it had perhaps been started earlier.
So are there things that we can look for if we have an older adult that might give us a clue that, oh, this is not just normal forgetfulness?
Yeah.
There are. So things like noticing their medicines. If you're noticing that their prescriptions are not getting filled every 45 days or every 60 days instead of the regular 30-day, unopened mail, dents, scratches on the car. Now, while one time or a couple times of this happening could be considered, you know, just bad luck or normal aging, if it's happening for long periods of times, they go to the grocery store, they're gone for 2 hours, they can't really explain, you know, where they've been or what took them so long, why are there so many scratches on the car, you just got to start investigating those things, because the other difficult thing is for this generation, they're very money conscious. And so you may have some seniors that, they remember to get their medicine every 30 days, but they've decided they're only going to take a half a pill because it's so expensive for them. So
that would not be rational thinking.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what percent of the people, though, that end up in a facility such as yours, a memory care facility, do they have Alzheimer's versus another memory disorder?
I'm not sure about the actual percentage of it, but I think what people need to know is that dementia is an umbrella term, and Alzheimer's is just one of the types of dementia that fall under that umbrella. There are many forms. There's vascular dementia. So people need to know that it's not just, oh, I've got this gene for Alzheimer's. Sometimes having open heart surgery, one of the side effects to that can be a hardening of the arteries, which causes deprivation of oxygen to the brain, and then can therefore cause vascular dementia. So there's Lewy body dementia. Those are all different forms, and it's all based on what your signs and symptoms are, is how your doctor comes up with what form you have.
So still I'm pressing you. Would you say that less than half perhaps have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's versus another form of dementia?
I would have to say yes. Again, I'm not the clinician of the group, but just in my experience and what I'm seeing in our neighborhoods is that it's hard to define exactly what Alzheimer's is. What I mm-hmm. can tell you, though, is that working with my families, the population of those that we're serving is getting younger. Does that mean that it's always Alzheimer's dementia? No, but it could be a good indicator. You know, being open almost 2 years, I know we'll see many changes ahead in our demographics. So in this amount of time, I'd say Alzheimer's is prevalent, but I don't think it's gone over the 50% mark.
So, and the reason I think that's important, among other reasons, is that it would suggest that maybe another form of dementia might not be quite as degenerative as that, as we expect from Alzheimer's, that someone may, in fact, live for a longer period of time, perhaps without coming entirely incapacitated. Is that true?
I don't believe that, because what we see happen is they start out with a certain type of dementia. Maybe vascular dementia is prominent for a lot of them. They have heart issues or any other comorbidities going on. It progresses to Alzheimer's.
So yes. It can start out as something else.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's interesting.
Again, it's just that those certain signs and symptoms, you know, when it falls into this, that's when the doctor's going to say, okay, now it's, you know, Alzheimer's. And for insurance purposes, diagnosis purposes, a lot of times you'll see Alzheimer's / dementia.
Yes. So give me a sense of what the ages are of the people who come into an assisted living center for memory care. And what are your statistics show?
I mean, I think it's a wide range. When we first opened, we worked with many adult children. Our first few neighbors that were moving in were in their early 90s. Now we're looking at those folks that might be in their 60s to mid-60s to 70s to 80s. And to me, that's extremely young. Heartbreaking. Our population has been about 50% male, which is insane for senior living. So I don't know what that says about the dementia or the umbrella of it, but we do.
Explain the 50%, though, what you meant by that.
Yes.
For male.
50% male, 50% female. And typically for a senior living community, it's always going to be dominated by females.
Because women live longer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I do occasional workshops and I talk about elder planning, and in my examples, I issue the disclaimer at the beginning, guys, you're going to die first. So throughout the evening, you know, it's going to be you dead and your wife planning.
So don't be offended.
That's right.
But yeah, that is interesting. So apparently it does appear to occur then in greater amount among males.
At least at our community.
At least your experience. But yeah. So I wonder if the fact that the average age is getting younger and now down to, you know, not rarely 60, early 60s even apparently, is that due to earlier diagnosis, do you think? Or do you think it's due to this coming on earlier?
I think it's earlier diagnosis, more education about the disease. And people, you know, if you would have asked someone, you know, 10 years ago, they would have been like, what? Yeah, I don't know anything about it. But it's out there. People are talking about it. Lots of people are affected. You asked about age. According to the Alzheimer's Association, and these are statistics just for Missouri, 65 to 74-year-olds right now in 2017, approximately 16,000. By 2025, they expect that number to go up 21,000. So by 2025, we're looking at 18.2% increase in Alzheimer diagnosis, without just for our state.
Without, and let's be hopeful for a medical discovery. Mm-hmm. But absent that, those statistics, that's the course, is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I am hopeful, and I don't think naively. I mean, as you all suggested earlier, and I don't know if we were on air or not, that you know, some of the programs that were launched have not been, you know, quite as fruitful as hopes earlier held out. But I know that from some very exciting stuff, from having heard the dean of the medical school speak last weekend at my wife's vegetarian supper club that she has each month. And so she has some great guests. I'll plug that. But also this director of the medical school, he's dean actually, he talked about some of the emerging genomic research and some of the promise with gene discovery and the technology and the biotechnology that really things such as Alzheimer's, that was one of the several areas he mentioned, where there's a lot of interest and some dollars and some effort. There's a political will too. That's one of those particular areas where there is a great urgency and a voice on the part of a lot of families who are speaking out.
Absolutely.
Versus some of the more orphan mm-hmm. problems. Mm-hmm. So I was encouraged by hearing his talk, not that it's around the corner, but that in 10 years, it's not inconceivable that there will be solutions. So I won't hold him to that specific statement, but it was an optimistic presentation.
Well, I think you're right. I remember with my mother doing the Walk to End Alzheimer's last year at St. Charles Community College, and they have signs posted along the way about when certain things with Alzheimer's dementia became prevalent to the public, and we're talking the late 90s, and to me that was just yesterday. So for a disease that is dominating healthcare, unfortunately, it's so new. We're just now able to say that this is an actual disease, that there are words that were used for the loss of memory for those folks a long time ago.
Senile.
Mm-hmm. Hardening of the arteries.
I remember those phrases.
Yes, I'm old
enough for that.
And now it's, oh my gosh, this is really happening. These folks are suffering not just with that short-term memory loss, but it is starting, you know, the disease process itself affects all of their senses, smell, sight, sound, taste, and recognizing that.
Yeah, I think there's, perhaps I'm naive, but I've always just kind of thought about it. It's the heartbreaking part is they don't recognize family, they don't understand what's necessarily going on, but you're telling us that it's affecting swallowing, it's affecting their sight, it's affecting physically them as well as mentally and emotionally.
I think for the longest time people did hear Alzheimer's or dementia and they thought, oh, they just, you know, can't remember. And
I thought it was they don't remember mom, or they don't remember their children, and that's heartbreaking. But I guess I didn't really realize all of the physical aspects that
people
come along with
die
it.
From Alzheimer's. Mm. It's the sixth leading cause of death in Missouri. More people die from this disease than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. So that's, you know, people, that's shocking to people. Mm-hmm. I think even now a lot of people out there think that, oh, they just can't remember. And no, they die from this disease.
And I think also to all those who are listening that are caretakers for somebody or just questioning, is this aging or is this possibly some form of dementia? When we think about the senses and how it is going to affect, keep in mind that, you know, vision being typically one of the first, that, you know, those who have dementia start to see some things as 2D rather than 3D. So there is a lot of touching and feeling for the brain to recognize, is that an apple on the table or is that a photo of an apple? The loss of peripheral vision. So as a caretaker, coming up to somebody from the side or behind can be very frightening for them because they can't see you yet. So, you know, as a caretaker, what we train those to do is to always be down at the level that they are, to stare right into their eyes from the front. So the less that we can startle people, the less agitation there is.
Yeah, that was a question I also wanted to know. What are some things that, your facility or any facility in memory care would do that accommodate that? I mean, you're saying talk to them. I mean, do you have long hallways, short hallways? Do you have bars on the things, so or ways to jog the memory? I don't know if any of those things are helpful.
Yeah, you know, in the design of our building, we are broke down into four, I say intimate neighborhoods. There are 15 neighbors in each neighborhood. The design of a neighborhood is a more circular to the oval shape. So if we have somebody who is night wandering, that's okay. We're there 24/7. They're not, though, being challenged by getting to the end of a hallway and then not knowing what to do or why they can't go through that door. They wander in circular fashion. They're touching things on the walls. They're in the living room feeling things and associating their shadow boxes with their life, things that the families have provided. And this is very common in memory care. This is not just our community. And then the next step is, how are you communicating? Susan, we did a little example of that prior to recording, but if you come at somebody and who's having a brain processing challenge in an aggressive, loud, you know,
menacing,
off the chart example of their body language, they're going to react very anxiously. But if we come at them with a smile, calming, touching, feeling them, and telling them it's going to be okay, this is what we're going to do next, the reaction that you're going to get from that person is pleasant.
So help make the argument for people who are at a point where they have a family member, there is a problem, but I suspect that people tend to err. In fact, as you've said earlier, people tend to err on the side of waiting too late rather than acting too soon. I mean, make the argument for why it may in fact be beneficial in several ways for people to, when in doubt, err on the side of considering a facility such as this, as opposed to thinking, you know, I have this duty to take care of my loved one at home. Maybe the loved one mistakenly believes, you know, whatever happens, I want to be at home because this is always better than anything else could be. Explain the advantages of being in the facility versus the home.
Well, I can tell you the first thing that comes to mind is less medication. So what happens when you try to keep your loved one at home, you feel like I'm doing what Dad wanted. He made me promise I wouldn't, you know, put Mom in a nursing home. And so you can't stay up 24/7. You're probably still working, so you are on a regular schedule. You've got to go to work during the day, and you've got to sleep at night. So you've got a couple choices. You can either get another family member that is on that kind of sleep schedule and can stay up all night with your loved one to make sure that Mom isn't getting up, walking out the door, turning on the stove, putting a can in the microwave, any of those things that could happen. Or you're going to start requesting, well, my gosh, she just can't sleep. We need something for her to sleep.
Yeah.
So it's very common for neighbors to come, and I look at their med list, and oh my gosh, they're on Halidol. That's a pretty big gun in the arsenal of meds to where, absolutely not. I'm totally fine with my neighbors getting up and walking around and touching things. And if they want hot cocoa, then we're going to get them hot cocoa or a snack. Or, you know, if the weather's permitting and they want to go walk in the courtyard, that's fine. That's what we're there for versus trying to medicate them.
Well, wait now. Hold this. I'm interrupting your answer. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. But what we're doing, those of you who have just tuned in, what we're doing is we're talking about what are the arguments for considering sooner than later the possibility that if you have a loved one that has a memory problem, that in fact something like assisted living may be a better thing, not only for you, but more importantly, for your loved one. So we'll pick up with this answer in one second.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back. Now, let's continue. So one point we made is that the practical realities is that if you're going to keep your loved one at home as long as possible, then there's lots of sacrifices being made. And in fact, there may be, in fact, be a lot of medication that's being given just to make this at all practical at that
Absolutely.
Stage. What else could we point to, April?
Yeah, I think the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, our goal is that we are finding ways to stimulate each of the neighbors that we have. And when they're at home, a lot of times what I hear from a family is, well, during the day, they just sit and watch TV all day long. And, you know, one concern to keep in mind is, well, number one, they may not even understand what they're watching. So what justice are we doing at that point? When we put a group of folks together at an activity and they all have some degree of cognitive impairment, they feel comfortable with each other. It's okay to say something that doesn't make sense because somebody's not going to jump in and correct them. So they have this unspoken relationship and this unspoken language that puts everybody at ease. And the other thing is, and I have mentioned several times how dementia does affect our senses, but we're doing things to stimulate their eyesight, to allow them to hear things differently, to taste things, and then reminisce that back into their life.
So this environment then is one where it's not like somebody sitting with them at home, which I can imagine this. And of course, I'm not an advocate for you know, placing our loved ones in a more institutional setting more than needed. But in this case, unlike a traditional nursing home, it would seem to me that there are genuine advantages that our family would enjoy more being in that environment than at home. You know, the general rule is that people want to age in place. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that somebody such as you describe would want to age in place when the alternative would be this more social environment that you're describing.
I'll tell you, my favorite thing has been watching a neighbor do something that is completely unexpected while their family is visiting. We do educate our families on embracing the fact that your loved one is not the same person that they were. Your dad is not your dad who ran the household, who took care of you, who made sure everything in your family was going to be okay. He's a different person now because of this disease. So when he gets into a moment in the neighborhood where he's singing and dancing and really loving life in that exact time frame, and I can look at the family and see the tears of joy that, yes, he's different, but he's enjoying who he is now. I don't think there's anything better than that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell me what other activities or things that you provide to make life better for people in a facility. I mean, are there group events? Are there field trips? What all do you do?
Absolutely.
A little bit of everything. Our activity director loves to utilize our bus, so we've done fishing trips. They do meals out at restaurants. Today we have a wedding going on at the neighborhood. So it's a vow renewal of 60 years. It's a traditional wedding, and we're missing it to be here, but they're videoing it for us.
So, touching base with the wedding, we have themed months, and all the activities kind of gear towards that. So June is our wedding month. We had another vow renewal last year. So the whole month starts out, and all of the neighborhoods are part of this. So they do cake tasting and pick out what kind of cake is going to be served at the ceremony. They make the centerpieces for the tables. They help pick out the flower arrangements, the invitations. We have music. They love music, so we have music very often.
So do they each have individual rooms?
Yes, they do. Where we're at, it is all private room with private full bathroom, and then there are two companion rooms on each neighborhood.
And companion room means if they have a spouse, for example, that chooses to live there also?
You know, it's been utilized three different ways. I mean, the traditional concept would be that it is a more cost-effective way to live in assisted living memory care for somebody, a female to live on one side and an unknown female to that person to live on the other side of the room, and they share their bathroom. We have, however, do have the one couple that they occupy both sides. They have a bedroom and a living room. And then we have a couple of neighbors that families in the downsizing process just didn't feel that one room was enough, so they're renting out both sides of a companion. So it's still a single person who has a bedroom, living room, and then they don't share their bathroom.
Hmm. So, and of course, that comes at a price.
It does.
So the base price that people can expect, give us that number again, is?
I mean, for my community, a companion room is $5,700 a month. A traditional suite is $6,387, and the deluxe suite is $6,692 a month.
Okay, so so someone could live there and share a suite for as little as $1,500. Is that what you're saying a month?
Fifty-seven.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I know. You know, and the thing is we understand having two people who want to be together and the importance of that. So my community, I do a second person discount. I don't charge husband $5,700, wife $5,700, yet they both receive full care. Maybe the one without dementia doesn't need as much of our help in the beginning. But as that particular person ages, I mean, we still do their medication management. We can jump in at any point and help with those activities of daily living for that person, too.
So also is provided, of course, three meals a day.
Correct.
Or more.
Or more. And they have somewhat of a menu to choose from each for each meal.
Yes. Yes. Lots of snacks also. So our neighborhoods are made up with full kitchens. So even though our main entrees come down from the large kitchen, the neighborhoods have fully functioning kitchens. So breakfast might be served at 7 a.m., but in one of our particular neighborhoods, we have a handful of neighbors that are quite adamant that they are absolutely not getting up at that point. They prefer breakfast between 9 and 10. That's totally fine with us, and our partners can fix that on the neighborhoods at the time. But a lot of it is activity-driven, too.
You know? How much freedom then do they have, like with kitchens and things like that? Can they come in and, like, if a family member wanted to come and do Christmas cookies with them
yes.
at Christmas, could they do that? And you would, they would have the freedom, but yet be in a supervised environment? Is that
That's correct. And to help the general public to understand, so in this type of an environment, the rooms, the private room, private bath, are going to surround the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen. So as we said earlier, some of those safety challenges of living at home with dementia is you may turn that stove on, if it's a gas stove, not light it, and now we have gas in the home. Our stoves, you do have to key code them on. They are the induction system. So if somebody was, whether it be a partner or family member, cooking there, and then once that powder pan is removed, it's cool to the touch and safe for our neighbors again. But as much as we can encourage our families to come in and do their events inside the building, the better response they get from the neighbor, from their loved one.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, we all want to, like, include the family member at Christmas and Thanksgiving or the family birthday or something like that. But sometimes that can be just a little overwhelming for someone with memory issues.
Yeah. We very much encourage them to look at, you know, our place as their home. So yes, if grandma normally bakes those cookies, that's one that I use very often, an example, with the grandchildren, bring the grandkids in. Bake those cookies there. We have barbecue
pits.
We have
plenty of tasters.
You know, barbecue there. It would probably be way too stimulating to try to take your loved one to a movie theater with a big screen and surround sound and all of that. But we do have a room where you can rent, you know, bring in a rented DVD or And there's a popcorn machine, and the lights can go out, kind of a theater room per se, private room set up for birthdays, those kind of thing. And we take every opportunity to bring the public in, not only to educate the public more on the disease process, but our neighbors love children, love children, love animals, pets. So every opportunity that we can bring them in, we sponsor lots of things, Easter egg hunts, pancakes with Santa, and superheroes, those kind of things to try to bring kids in.
So, you know, it looks like the line might kind of blur, though, between, I'm thinking of a relative who, yes, she has some memory issues, but she has all those other issues, too. But she can navigate, meaning she can walk about and she can, you know, do basic things. She even, I showed her to think, drives. But the point is, you know, I can see where I'm thinking of her and I'm thinking, well, you know, would I suggest to her assisted living or would I suggest assisted living for memory care? Do you find people who kind of potentially could fall into either of those facilities?
Sometimes, but you just kind of said you shudder to think of, you know, her driving. So there's kind of your answer right there is on a traditional assisted living, they're going to be able to leave.
So they do. And so that is the definition, as you said earlier, is people who are considering assisted living for a loved one, they need to know that that person has the liberty to do themselves harm in many ways, just like they do at home.
Absolutely. Hey. And I think you'll notice those places if perhaps your loved one does leave and takes a longer walk than they should. You're going to get a 30-day notice saying, you know, it's not safe for your loved one to be here anymore, and then you're going to be looking at memory care, just something with a little bit more protective oversight for them.
So if in doubt, it sounds like, and this is an important point, I think, for our listeners, if in doubt and we think there's a memory issue and we're wanting stability for our loved one long term, then it might be better to think about a memory facility versus one that is a normal assisted care in which they may be, as you suggested, asked that they, you know, come and get their loved one in 30 days or so.
You know, and as the professionals in the field, we definitely understand the confusion in that area. So whether you're looking at that traditional assisted living or assisted living with the memory care component, each community is going to do what's called a community-based assessment. And so Anne, as our director of nursing, is who does the assessment for our neighborhood to make sure that we would be the appropriate level of care for somebody. So if the assessment has been done by a traditional assisted living, there's a chance that your loved one may not pass. And then right away you would know that memory care is probably a better avenue.
That's an important point. So that may be, in fact, what families can rely on is this assessment that you do and that sort of thing.
Yes, it's a universal assessment that's used by the state of Missouri, and it will you ask, you know, a series of questions, and it's going to give you a baseline for their cognitive and their physical needs. So sometimes, you know, I go out to do an assessment. You can bring your loved one into us, or I'll, you know, come to the home. Sometimes, you know, I have to be the bad guy that says, you know, I think they need more than what we can provide.
Boy, this is a rich conversation and relevant to so many people. And many people, you know, struggle with, you know, is this normal what I'm observing in my family? Mm-hmm. Is this normal what I'm experiencing? And one message we've gotten from this discussion, as you've emphasized, Anne, is there are things that are helpful to slowing down the process if people act soon. So when in doubt, investigate. And another point worth considering that I quite frankly did not know till we started this conversation was how appealing an assisted living facility can be for memory care when you compare the hardships of at home, hardship on everybody, but even the loved one, him or herself. Mm-hmm. So very interesting. Maybe we can have you guys back sometime in the future.
That'd be great.
I'd love to.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you for being on. Hope everyone found this as helpful and interesting as we did. Another hour in the can with Elder Talk.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.